Harper Audio presents Gossip by Beth Gutchen, performed by Kimberly Farr. "You were asking about Dinah Wainwright," I said to Judy Mellencroft, once we got her bodice basted. Mrs. Oba was on the floor with her mouth full of pins, taking up the hem of a sleek, wine-colored evening sheath. Judy is so tiny that we have to reconstruct everything she buys, but it's worth it. She loves the designers I carry, and she's out in my clothes every day for lunch and most nights during the season, a walking advertisement for the shop, and I don't even have to give her a discount. Having a storefront on Madison Avenue is usually a boon, but that day I could have wished for an appointment-only operation upstairs somewhere off the avenues. We'd had more walk-in traffic in 2 days than in the prior 2 years, and everyone who rang the bell tracked muddy slush in, along with their curiosity. The sky was heavy, and there were huge puddles at the street corners where the grates were still clotted with snow. And inside, we felt like animals in the zoo. I had a beautiful taffeta opera coat in the window, my winter staple. I don't carry fur anymore, even as trimming. So much has changed since I first opened. But this is one evening coat that is as warm as fur and doesn't make you look like a stuffed cabbage. However, the gawkers pretending to study it were not thinking of upgrading their wardrobes. Could we talk about fur for just a minute? When whoever it was wrote of nature red in tooth and claw, he could have been talking about the kind of mayhem an ermine can cause in a hen house. They kill for pleasure. My father tried keeping chickens for a while. Believe me, the sight of those slack, defenseless, feathered bodies lying on the floor of the coop with their throats ripped open while the rest of the flock screams in terror is enough to make a fur wearer out of anybody. Ermine, on clothes, the emblem of kings. You know what it is, really, an ermine? A stoat in winter. Their coats change color, except for a flick of black at the ends of their tails. They have no intention of eating the chickens. They're in it for the screaming. Sorry. The point is, it was a hard day. I had Dinah Wainwright in the back fitting room, trying to give her some privacy, but Judy must have heard her voice. If Dinah's voice were a color, it would be magenta, a warm color as vital as blood, mixed with that dark blue of late evening sky and with something rich and brown, like chocolate. It's not so much that the voice carries as that it draws you. You want to hear what she's talking about. In our school days, when you heard a peal of that voice laughing, you wanted to be there, where the fun was. Nowadays, when she laughs, there's a rattle in the undertones, like someone shaking a jar of buttons. Dinah didn't stop smoking nearly soon enough. A great way to get Dinah to do something was to tell her she shouldn't do it. I couldn't blame Judy for asking. I'd been described in the tabloids as a friend of the family, apparently because I'd answered the phones. But if I had minded her asking, I couldn't have shown it. You don't keep your customers by being touchy. I probably should have taken Dinah straight upstairs to the workroom, but it happened to be stacked with samples for spring we hadn't had a chance to sort and price yet. I don't think you can really understand this story without knowing how long we all have been in each other's lives. Dinah and I met in 1960, when we were 15, the day we both arrived at boarding school. I was a scholarship student at Miss Pratt's, which nobody knew. So was Dinah, which everybody knew, because she told them. My first day at school was indelible, mostly not in a good way. For our classmates, arriving at school was a family affair. They came in station wagons with their parents. On the sidewalk, they shrieked greetings to friends. They sang out, "Man on floor!" when someone's father or brother entered the dorm lugging a trunk, as if they were characters in a cozy British movie like The Bells of St. Trinian's. I had come alone and was watching the street from the window of the room I'd been assigned, wondering how many days it was until I could go home for Christmas vacation, when behind me that oboe voice said, "You would be Lovia French." She even pronounced it right, Lovia. Dinah was already dressed like the quintessential Miss Pratt's girl, in a knee-length skirt, charcoal knee socks, and a shell-pink sweater over her matching blouse. She lounged against the door jamb, a marvelous creature, with huge blue eyes and mad dark hair.